You're listening to Stateside. I'm Zoe Clark, sitting in today for Cynthia Canty. 50 years ago today, the MC5 performed the first of two shows at Detroit's Grandy Ballroom for their Kick Out the Jams live recording. So let's hear about this group that helped set the stage for Detroit's punk scene. Paul Young is the founder and publisher of Detroit Music Magazine. He calls the MC5 one of the most infamous and celebrated groups in Detroit music history.
Yeah, that's right. And it wasn't always true. But I think over time, especially Detroit, has come to understand the importance of MC5 and the influence that they had on other bands in the area, but also just like the greater rock and punk aesthetic and community, you know, across the globe.
Young recently spoke with Cindy about the many issues that inspired the MC5's music.
There's going to be some young folks listening who may go, what, who, when? tell us how and when the MC5 got started. Give us a sense of the span of their career.
Yeah, and I'm going to have so much fun going through all this because the history is so rich and deep, and it's been covered a lot, and shamefully, I will pitch the fact that I'm writing a book about the history of Detroit's punk music scene, and this is a huge part of the story that I'm making sure that I get right. But they started in 1964, and the original lineup is Wayne Kramer, who's still with them today. We're going to talk a lot about him. Fred Sonic Smith, Rob Tyner, Michael Davis, and Dennis Thompson. And they have a new adjusted lineup now, but they're celebrating the 50th anniversary of their debut and live album called Kick Out the Jams. And Kick Out the Jams was recorded over two nights live, again, in Detroit at the very famous Grandy Ballroom on Devil's Night and Halloween in 1968.
Wow, that is hard to believe. And we will be listening to that. We're going to make y'all wait a little bit for that, because we're first going to start with a choice you've made for us, Paul Young, and that is the MC5's cover of John Lee Hooker's song, Motor City is Burning. Let's take a listen. This one?
One of the big reasons was I'm lucky enough to have already seen the MC50 show. I saw it here in New York, and Wayne Kramer spent a lot of time in New York after he got out of prison, which you can read all about in his new book, The Hard Stuff. But he was working with bands and punk groups in the area, including the infamous G.G. Allin. But when I went to the show, he talked a little bit backstage about the Detroit influence on MC5 and why the MC5 became what it was and how it got there and what Detroit's influence had on the group. And I'll quote him here, but part of what he said was the success of the auto industry was a big motivator or a big influence on the group. And he said, guys moved up from the South for those good union jobs. Factories were 24/7, three shifts a day. And these young guys had money. They wanted to go to clubs. They wanted to have a beer and they wanted to dance. They wanted to hear music and it was great for musicians. He also says, a lot of families were making good money and could afford electric guitars for their kids, and that was me.
Wow.
He also went on to say that he came up in the city that was a boomtown where all things were possible, and the Great War was done, and it was good to see the USA in your Chevrolet. But with that, he said, my generation grew up with a kind of pissy attitude because we saw a lot of what they were talking about wasn't true for everyone, that people of color and the poor were not sharing in the great prosperity of America.
And you have Vietnam going on with that. You have the rebellion of 1967. So there was a lot of churn.
A ton. And actually, as you just alluded to, John Lee Hooker's version of the song, which was on his album Urban Blues, it was written by Al Smith, but it was written in 1967. So this was about something at the time when both John Lee Hooker and MC5 recorded this song. The ashes were still hot from what was happening in the city in 67.
Now, we're going to move on to the next song, but before we do, you have to explain to us, what is Rocket Reducer number 62?
Yeah, so my understanding is that at the time, it was a solvent, it was a chemical thinner that was available at hardware stores, and the rumor is that the band would give that a sniff before some of their live shows.
Right on your back, you know I got the beat.
What jumps out at you with this track?
In my opinion, this is actually like the standout track of this album. I just think the dueling solos, you know, between Smith and Kramer, along with just like the crazy feedback, I would argue that this sonically may be the strongest song on the album.
And now to the track that is arguably the best known the MC5 turned out. I'm going to tell you a story. When I was in school in the 60s, Catholic school, somebody lined up the MC5 to play at our sock hop, at our dance. And the good nuns got wind of the opening line, kick out the jams, followed by a two-word epithet that began with mother and ended with a word that would get me fired. So I can tell you that dance was quickly and decisively canceled. So what do you hear, Paul Young, when you listen to Kick Out the Jams?
Yeah, I mean, this is like the rallying cry, obviously. A couple things interesting that you mentioned at that beginning. That was such a huge deal at the time, as you just pointed out, that Hudson's, the big Hudson store that we actually just celebrated, I think, the 20th anniversary of the building going down. But the big Hudson store, they refused to sell the album. And so Electrica Records, that they were on at the time, put out this big ad in the paper that was just a picture of, I believe, Rob Tyner. And it just said, you know, F Hudson's, ultimately. And then the logo of the record label, but that was just part of what launched them into that infamous kind of lore that they enjoy now. But another part is the Kick Out the Jams. Actually, that line, a lot of people think it's kind of like this protest call, but according to Kramer, it was really what they yelled at bands that were on stage before MC5 to tell them to like wrap it up and get out of here and give us our turn ultimately.
I love it. And you can just tell from that, as you say, a key part of Detroit's punk rock scene, even going back to the 60s when this song was stirring so many nuns and others up.
Huge. And they ended up being a massive influence, and they laid a lot of groundwork for bands like the Stooges and the Up and, you know, a ton of others. And hopefully we'll finally be able to see them in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which I know a lot of music people think it doesn't matter, but I think it does in a sense that these guys have paid their dues. They're legendary performers and recording artists, and some of them are no longer with us, and I think they deserve it. But this is their third time being nominated, so I think 2018 might be the year. And less than a year ago, we were on your show talking about people that we thought should be in the Hall of Fame from Detroit.
Yep.
And this was our number one, so...
One of the most infamous and celebrated groups in Detroit music history, the MC5. And those words from Paul Young, founder and publisher of Detroit Music Magazine. Paul, thanks so much.
Thank you.